What's going on, grown man community? This is the Grown Man Project podcast. This is Coach A coming to you here, and I have a good friend and special guest on today. I can't wait for you guys to hear from this guy. He's a wealth of knowledge. He brings wisdom. He brings character, and I'm really just honored that he wanted to do this and jump in on what we're trying to do, which is really just to inspire, equip, and commission men out there to go step into their fullest potential, to grow the kingdom, to know that God has a special plan for them. Our special guest today is Dr. Dean Nicholas. Dean got his PhD at Hebrew Union College. He attended Wheaton College for his undergrad and master's. The guy has been in education for probably a much longer time than he thought he would be at the level he is, but the richness and the depth to what he brings to a place that I actually work at, Cincinnati Hills Christian Academy High School. Dean has been there for 25 years, a life's work already, and I know he still has more to do. He's just scratching the surface. Christian Studies Department for about 11 years, where he taught a range of classes with students, and he was spending time as the chair of that department or working in cohorts with a lot of those people. He also now has been in administration for 14 years, 13 of those as the principal of our upper school as well as all campuses. He's now in his first year as the new assistant head of school, as well as the upper school lead. And so he has transitioned somewhat, I wouldn't say completely, but somewhat into a role that now encompasses all the pieces of really the heartbeat of CHCA. And so you guys are going to hear from him and what's going on in education, his experiences, what it's like leading on numerous fronts at a place that is trying to leave a legacy and impact that's going to grow the kingdom and build into really the next generation of leaders. So without further ado, let's jump into this episode. Hey, Dean, what's going on, man? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Adam. Thanks for that great introduction. I heard that and I thought, wow, I'd like to meet that guy. You make me sound better than I am.
I mean, the man, the myth, the legend. Here he is. I mean, this guy, I will tell you, listeners out there, Dean has become a good friend of mine. He's also my boss's boss, but it's not really that kind of a structure when you're in education. You seem to be collaborative with everybody. But man, Dean, getting on here, this has been a long time coming, man.
Yeah, sounds like I held out.
But yeah, it's been a whole lot. Finally paid up. There we go. Now catch you in here. Really happened. But no, today is exciting for me because this is a chance for us to just open up and look inside and see what is going on in the educational space. And you have been around for 25 years. I mean, you've had three kids all go through CHCA, Jake being your oldest, now at Grand Canyon University, which I believe he's coming home.
Yeah, we're going to pick him up Saturday, see him for the first time this semester. So that's great.
Awesome. So Jake's out at Grand Canyon University, and then your two younger sons, Pete and Abe, are both at CHCA currently. And so not only do you have this experience as an educator and administrator, also as a parent. So I just want to know, man, like walk us through, what's that like being the head of really this institution and what that looks like from a principal standpoint, now assistant head of school standpoint, and then a teacher and parent.
Yeah, it's sometimes when you stand back at it and hear it that way, it sounds overwhelming, but there is something powerful about being a part of something in a very holistic way. So beginning where you had, for me, my two classes, right? And that was the domain in which you could work and have influence and people you could come in contact with, to growing to all kinds of courses, to an administrator where then you, again, your ability to engage and influence and meet people grows. Now in this new role, where I am over the educational side of the school, from teachers, parents, and students, and education, and athletics, and fine arts. So everything on the educational side, I get to have a hand in and get to work with folks. It's really a powerful thing. And when you work at a place where your students are also involved, it gives you a great perspective because you realize that the things you're seeing in your home and in your students, in your kids, as they learn and grow, it gives you a different vantage point than you sometimes do when you're just looking at from afar. Right. You get an inside view.
You're almost a self-audit.
Yeah, right.
You're almost a self-audit on, oh boy, okay, maybe I need to take a look. No, we have great people at CHC. I think that's probably one of the things you hang your hat on the most, right? It's like, look, we're going to have a high-level education here and experience, right? A Christian education experience that's got practical application, hands-on learning, but the people are what make the place, right? And I know you've said that a number of times. You want to hire the person, right? Not necessarily the ability. Is that correct in saying that?
And you know, it's interesting because the people part is really what changed everything for me. I was a product of public school. Until I got to Wheaton College. That was my first private institution. Julie and I put our kids into our local public schools. And we were very happy with that. And we felt like this was a way for Christians to be involved in the world, to come into contact with people, to be ministering in any way we could. And so on one hand, I kind of had this attitude, even though I was working in a Christian school, I really valued it. I thought my kids would be in the public school in the neighborhood, so we invested in our community. The thing that really changed it for me was the colleagues I worked with every single day. And I got to see the way they interacted with students. I saw the way they got to be mentors and guides, not just educators. I saw the way they ministered to students. And as a parent, as your kids get older, you start to realize you can't do this alone. And kids, as they get older, go through this phase where their parents don't know anything and they're going to go to somebody who does. And I thought, I'm selling a place about how great these colleagues are to teach, to mentor, to grow. And I thought, how could I not have my own kids have this experience? And to see that played out for Jake and my other kids, that I know I have these godly adults who are building into them, is something that I couldn't find to that degree anywhere else.
Well, and it's funny because you also have this, you have this pulse on things that you realize, and you get a lens from even your children's standpoint of the experience. So you get both ends of that. You know, for me, when I hear you talk about that, I immediately go to, okay, the leadership that has to go into this and the time and resources that has to go into this. I mean, Dean, you're managing a number of personalities and people, right? From a board to your other administration at the various levels, to community of parents and people, to your teachers, to your students. How do you lead in that capacity amongst all the various ways? There might not be a secret to that. It may just be, hey, we're still learning. But have you found something that stands out on that? Because I know other people out there that are listening are like, okay, I'm in a position where I do lead, or you're in a position where you have someone leading you and you're trying to work through that. What's that like for you, man?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And for me personally, I begin with knowing that I know the why of what I'm doing, to have a vision of what I believe a school should be, what our education should look like, what that school experience should be like. And you don't come up with a vision like that on your own. You have other with you, but it begins with a conviction about what the kind of kingdom work we're trying to do to educate young people, right? Giving a passion to learn, lead, and serve. Once you begin with that, then it's really about how do you affect relationships with people at every level, those above you, those who are your peers, those who you are supposed to have oversight and manage, for a student's experience, for a parent, to figure out the way to say everyone's going to engage that experience a little bit differently. But I believe that the key is having relationships with all those different constituency groups, to be able to get them together to understand and to hear. And so I feel like if I can share vision, if I can vision cast, and then become that conduit who can hear from all these different constituencies, and that I can then share with the others to say, where do we find common ground? How do we move forward?
Yeah.
To me, that becomes really important. So for me, to hear from what a parent is thinking versus what a teacher is thinking versus what a student's thinking, and to find that place where those come together in a way, that vision of where we want to go, I feel like that's my role as a leader.
You know, I love what you're saying there, because what it tells me is the relationship you're looking for is not transactional, but transformational. And if I can attest to that, not only because you're leading our school, but because I also walked those halls as a kid, not knowing the types of dynamics, but to come back and still see some of the same people here that still love and teach in a manner that says, wow, like they, you know, they still got it. They're still bringing it. Or to see new teachers. I mean, we're hiring alumni back at the school now, and you're seeing the fruit in the lineage, right? So all of that time, all of the resources, the information you're gathering to help lead is turning into fruit that is well down the road, but it's not transactional, it's transformational. Those are the relationships we're looking for. And I think that that has something to say. So as a listener, when I think about, you know, okay, what type of dynamic do I have? What's my team like, right? I think this is a great question to ask Dean, because Dean is constantly building teams. You're literally a GM drafting, you know, your next team of people over and over again. And so what goes into building a team? What does that look like? You know, we talk about hiring the person, but what goes into building a team? Can you break that down for us a little bit?
Yeah, there's a number of things. When you know, every team, you have to think, what's the team supposed to do, yes, right? Am I creating a baseball team or a business team?
Yes.
And so when I think about education and building teams, when I'm thinking who would be successful, I'm looking for two key things. I want someone who is passionate about their subject area, and I want someone who is relational with students and people. If you can do those two things, I feel like everything else for a teacher can fall into place. You can learn different methods. You can learn different tricks for the toolbox. But if you're passionate about your subject, and if you can be relational with your students, if you can really connect with them in a way that they really know that you care about them as people, then you can teach. Then they can learn from you. And so when you look at any team, right, I think that's the key part of teacher teams. I walked into CCA with absolutely no teaching experience. I was going to be a professor. And so oftentimes, and I hope this is changing, but back in the day, right, professors were just scholars, and they put them in front of people and said, well, tell us what you know. And so it was information. But the kinds of things teachers say, well, how do I make sure students are really learning? No one's teaching scholars that, right?
Right.
So I walked into CHCA never having a single class on teaching. And they trusted me, and they put me in there, and they said, you know, have at it. And I had to realize real fast, you know, the whole list of things, you know, you're reading about my pedigree.
Took up half the whiteboard.
14-year-old in a Bible class did not care about that.
No.
They were excited that they saw me excited about the Bible, and they appreciated the fact that I cared about them as people.
Yeah.
And because of that, and this is something that makes me so happy, that first class I taught, like, that's a long time ago right now. That's 97.
You're pushing it.
Those folks are now friends, and they're people that I broadcast football games with, and they're people that come by and still visit. But it wasn't because I was a master teacher. It was because I was passionate about my subject, and they were that I cared about and that we were in relationship with for 4 years throughout school.
That's pretty awesome. I'm glad you were able to list one or two things as well. I always think it's important to hear that, because a lot of times we're defined by what? Our performance. We're defined by, you know, what we bring in business-wise, what our numbers were, you know, client-wise, et cetera. And, you know, again, listeners out there, yes, that is absolutely a part of what you have to do. You have to perform. But identity-wise, you know that you can help teach and get them to the level of performance because you saw the two things that you absolutely have to have from them, which is the passion and the relationship building, the transformational relationship building. And, you know, you touched on something, Dean, and I think, do you have something more you want to say? Yeah. No, what do you got?
Because I kind of ended up going down about specific teachers, but yeah. I read a great book a year ago, Team of Teams. Team of Teams.
Who's that?
That is by General Stanley McChrystal.
Our listeners love it. Little book shout out. So write that down. Team of Teams.
Team of Teams. And he talked about when After 9/11, you have the whole Pentagon saying, we know how to fight an enemy. And all of a sudden they realize the American military infrastructure, all of its power, all of its equipment, all of its high tech, didn't know how to take on an enemy like Al-Qaeda. And top-down hierarchical approach that says, right, here's where it comes from, you know, from the top, and it works its way down, and we go through certain systems, and we know how to right, check ourselves. We know that we have the systems in place to take out any enemy. Well, that doesn't answer for suicide bombers to come out of nowhere. That doesn't answer the question of people who don't use normal communications. That doesn't fit people who don't fight in normal battle lines.
There's no training manual on that stuff, right?
And the military had to rethink it. And McChrystal, team of teams, said, if you think about being a leader, you have to be a leader who forms teams. And then you think of those teams as being part of a greater team. But you have to give a certain level of autonomy for those teams to work in their expertise and have a certain level of fluidity that doesn't necessarily keep the normal chain of command, run everything through bureaucracy. You have to give people the ability to excel in their areas of giftedness and to think on the fly to respond to the problems at need, the need at hand. And I think about trying to lead in today's day, like, how do you school? How do you make sure, right, you have to trust people and empower them to lead teams and that you oversee all those teams. But if you try to micromanage every detail of every teacher in every class, in every building, you need to create teams that work and teams that trust each other and that you can trust in them. And I see that as a key way to make large organizations be more effective than kind of an old school, traditional hierarchical pattern of leadership.
Do you have some methods that you've used that keep a pulse on things, but still allow for that autonomy, like the looking at that, checking things? Like, have you found some things that work? And it may only work in education, or maybe it just works at our school, CHCA, but are there some things that you have found method-wise that work like that and have had success?
Well, the most important things for me is that having connection with your teams, right, that you then empower. And so whether that's when I'm upper school principal, that's a weekly meeting with our upper school team that we're regularly checking in, what people are working on, what are our strategic things we need to be thinking about more broadly, how do we help people get done what they need to. In my role now, it's the weekly check-ins with principals. What's going on in your building? How can we help? But it's also just building relationships with those groups of people that you feel a sense of trust and security with those folks, that you can be open and honest with each other. Teams that I love, again, there's nothing new to this, right? But when you're part of a team where everyone trusts each other and you can be open about here's where I'm struggling or here's what I did that didn't work or here's a problem, that's a great environment for people to learn and grow and to lead in. And so for me with teachers, it's always trying to have this open door and a kind of relationship where it's not you're the boss that's feared and I can only tell you what I'm good at. I love people that can walk into my office or I come in and observe them and they say, this didn't work at all. What would you try? Right? Once we're all learn to be able to say something didn't work and I'm frustrated with something, that's a great environment to work in and lead in. And it's a hard thing though, because sometimes as you lead, you get in this situation where people start to not want to tell you the truth because they fear you for your position. So that's one of the problems with leadership sometimes is that as people under you, sometimes they don't want to be upfront with their own struggles and how you could help them because people sometimes fear the leader. And so that kind of honesty and openness is really important.
I mean, don't bite the hand that feeds you, right? That's probably something that goes through a lot of people's minds. Right. Don't bite the hand that feeds you, man. You're paying me. I'm better off just being complacent here. But if you have, I hear you say all these things and I think about intentionality. If I know that you are being intentional about everyone's development and growth. And that when I'm meeting with you, I'm asking you questions. It's not I'm questioning what you do, your character, who you are. I'm asking questions to get us to think bigger, to improve in areas that may or may not need improvement, but address it. And I think a lot of times we need to get our own pride and really some of our insecurities out of the way on that, but it can't happen unless you know that your leader, the person that's looking after you, tending to the flock, right? The shepherd, that you are coming to them with intention around certain things they know your heart. And that's hard in the workplace. I know that we're still working on that at CHCA, but that has definitely been something that I think a lot of people would probably, if you ask them, are going to be on the positive side and then say, yeah, this is again, collaborative space where we do that. But you're not going to sit back and be complacent, Dean, and just say, okay, well, this is fine. Let's just let it run. Like, right. What can we continuously do? Again, we're marketing ourselves. We're growing the brand. We're continuing to develop. We want to be a forefront leader. I mean, we talk about it all the time. We want to be leading this Christian education space as much as possible. That's the vision, at least one part of the vision.
Right.
So I want to actually go back to something you said, and I think this is important because sometimes you don't know where God's going to take you. Sometimes you just don't know where God's going to take you. And Dean, I'd love for you to talk a little bit. This is kind of part of your testimony as you've come into this role of really the last 25 years. Good Lord. You, one year, maybe two, was the original intention for your time at CHCA.
And God said no. It's funny because I joke sometimes that I had an attitude and mindset that I wouldn't want in a teacher I hired because I was coming here looking to put a line on a CV that said I had teaching experience, which would help me go get the tenure track job. And as someone who went right from undergrad to a fifth year master's to a PhD program without a break, I was really young. I hadn't published anything yet. I didn't adjunct professor anywhere. So my colleagues were saying, classmates, graduate school, if you don't have all this stuff on your CV, you're never getting a tenure track job. And so for me, CHCA was the place I knew because my wife teaching at EBL put me through graduate school. And this was the place where I was going to teach for a year just so I could put that one line down. And most of the mentors in my life said that was a bad idea because I was looking to be this high-end academic scholar. And if you're in a PhD program, you're often condescending about thinking you'd teach undergrads in college, right? You're just teaching graduate school students. So to teach 14-year-old Bible was looked at. So one former professor said, you'd be typecast. You don't want to do that. And so I went in with this attitude of, I'll be honest, like this was beneath my ability. I was going to hate these kids and they'd hate me, but it didn't matter because I was looking for that one line on the CV.
Stepping stone, right? That's, right. You know, just getting where you need to.
And then I never met more engaging, fun, interesting people to talk about faith, Bible, religion with, then, you know these guys, right? Joe Ashbrook, Chad Leland, Katie Gaffney, and all these people that, I still am in contact with. And I just realized that there was something powerful about this and that the kind of joy, but at the same time, I realized the kind of impact for some of those students were the class of 2000, which I just, to this day, because I started with them and I spent 4 years with them, some of them, and I taught all 4 years Christian studies. Mm-hmm. I said, that's why I'm here 25 years later.
And they were a special crew, man.
Special. And you realize as a college professor where you're teaching mostly majors and be small and a group of people, to have 100 students that you spend every day with for years on end, and the kind of relationship and the kind of impact and the kind of growth you have, they're having, oh, man, I'm having too. I'm growing because I'm teaching Bible to young people who are challenging me in my thinking. There was nothing better. And there are days when I'm doing the job I'm doing now, I think, I wish I could just go back and sit in classes with students, learning, growing, and wrestling through things, which is why I still, this year I don't have one, but, except for 1 year in my administrative years, I've taught a class either in the summer or in the fall with seniors or both. because I need to stay in the classroom.
Well, a couple things as, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm fortunate enough we're actually getting to record this in the same video, but just listening to you, but also being able to look at you. Listeners, if you could see the smile on his face right now, I can tell he's reminiscing. Like in his mind, he's talking to us, but he's like reminiscing on probably the crazy stuff and the good stuff and everything in between from that experience with those kids back in the late 90s and 2000s and even till today. But you can see why Dean has continued to stay in education and the really the trek that God's taken him on, that he had no, I mean, dude, in your mind back then, you're a professor still right now. You probably have some things published. You're probably tenured. You're just cruising. Show up to my class, take it. Cool. I'll teach you. You know, I think this has made a vibrant stamp in your life and that you can be who God really intended you for you to be. On that, Dean. And so I love that, man. What did God teach you through that process? Was there a softening of the heart? Was there an opening of eyes? Like what did God teach you through this, man?
I feel like a lot of the teaching that God was doing, he was doing through a colleague and friend, Pete Dongel.
Okay. And, tell me a little bit about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Pete Dongel was a classmate of mine at HUC. And so everyone's trying to figure out how to survive graduate school and make some money and you know, get through that hard process of graduate school. And Pete and I were playing basketball 2-3 nights a week in the gym at HUC.
Oh, my gosh.
And visual. I was telling him, hey, you got to come teach with me at this place. And he was kind of like, I don't know if that's for me. But you just got to. And I brought him and hung out in my classes. And the next year, he was teaching. And I think Pete got it from the beginning that we're teaching, but we're doing the work of the church. We're doing ministry. Mm-hmm. And I kept always wrestling with this. Okay, but what am I going to go do the college thing, which I'm supposed to do? And sometimes I would get too caught in what I saw is like this was the kind of academic rigor I needed, and Pete would always remind me, no, but this is ministry, right? It's about kids' hearts. And in time, you start to realize that's what I'm really doing here. That's what's really important, right? This idea, I kind of have this bifurcated idea that there's ministry, because to go way back, I felt as a young kid, I was being called to be a pastor. And in the end, TA in college, and I went into a PhD program. It's like, oh no, I'm not doing that. I'm going to be a scholar. And I had that distinct in my head. Hmm. There's being a pastor, and I'm not that. I'm a scholar. I teach the Bible. I'm not one of those pastor folks. And Pete would always remind me those things shouldn't be separate.
Okay.
And I came to realize how correct he was. And I saw that what I was doing was teaching and expanding the mind of students, but if I was doing my job fully, it was to change their hearts as well, and that they would be engaging scripture and theology and church history, not just intellectually, but it had to be transformative. And I would see that happen, but I would just see that as, well, that's great that happened, but I didn't necessarily see how significant it was to be thoughtful about that and to see how those two sides, if done correctly, should be flip sides of the same coin. And so that was something I learned in my time here, and that this is all kingdom work, and that God calls us into, God has a calling on each of us, and what that vocation is, the way you live that out might be different, but the calling is the same.
Man, you're talking our language in the grown man community, man. Vocation, and I've heard you say all these things. You're right. It's what we are called to do, this purposeful life, and that you can have an occupation, and it may not be all that, but it may put you in a position to be able to do other things that you know you're called to as well. And I'm fortunate because I have the mix of both. You know, I call what I do as a strength conditioning coach, it's somewhat of like a street ministry, right? Like I'm just constantly doing that, and we're using that as a channel and an avenue, and it reaches other kids and coaches and whatnot, but it's constant kingdom work. That's what it is, man. And when you have that lens of focus in, it makes things so much more clear and just what you're supposed to be doing. Like you just, you kind of just know. And I mean, dude, I could tell you right now, the fruit from your end for us, I mean, the guys from the Grown Man Project, Kurt Kersey, class 2008, Jeff Agricola, class 2008, Chad Howe, class 2008, me, 2007. There's fruit that because of you guys and all the people, you know, Pete Donjell, along with anyone else, you may have not seen it then, but hopefully you see that now. And I think for listeners, that's important because, you know, I look at Dean across this table and I see a mentor, right? I see someone that, yeah, do I work for him in a capacity? Yes, but I don't ever feel like that. I feel like I'm constantly like being mentored. And I hope that other guys out there have that, right? Through their community, through their circle of people or the inner corner, and not just dad. Like dad is so important. I didn't have dad around. So I had men in my life that were assuming that role as mentors. And so, man, just speaking life, and I guarantee you, if all those guys were in this room right now, they'd be saying the same thing, that CHCA, maybe in the moment right then and there when we graduated, wasn't like this spiritual, faith-filled thing that like all of a sudden we had our aha moment. But the roots and the foundation were there in a way. And like you said, if I get to turn back around and see that when they come back through and see what's bloomed from that, and all of our other teachers, like sometimes that's hard. It's hard because you don't necessarily see it right there because those seeds are just planted and they're just deep, right? And like God's working on them. But man, if you could see that now and other listeners out there too, like I hope that if you know somebody that's influenced you or impacted you the way that like Dean has for me and the other guys, let them know. It goes so far. I mean, Dean, right? Like every time you hear a story, we just got off another podcast interview with a young man who graduated back in 2016, Chase Murray. Someone that you got to spend time with, that you got to see, and you're seeing his fruit right now, 4 or 5 years later, about how he's had to deal with anxiety and his faith bringing him through that he didn't realize he really had these roots in.
Yeah.
You're seeing that, man. And so like, those are the moments, right? That's why you're still here 25 years later and still growing the kingdom through the different young people that you're meeting and the teachers that pour into them too, and the administration, man. I mean, that's what it's like. Mentors, talk about mentors in your life. I'm on that subject. Might as well ask you. They're here to listen to you, not me. But who are some mentors in your life? You know, people that have influenced you, helped you, and
it's interesting because you go through your life at different stages. There are different people who challenge you and make you think and make you grow. One of the first people who really sticks out. And I saw him probably about 5-6 years ago for the first time in maybe 20 years. His name was Doug Rudnick, and he was a youth pastor. And he wrote me this note. He's the youth pastor who'd go to the playground and play basketball with you for a couple hours, right? Okay. Like a high school play, yeah. Middle school, high school. That was just the greatest thing. He wrote me a letter once that really kind of spoke into my life in ways that challenge, think about what God was calling me to do and be and what that might look like. And it was something I held on to, you would go back to, right? And so reconnecting him years later was a powerful thing. And then, right, when I was in college, I ended up being a TA for a professor named Hassel Bullock. And if you're in the world of like evangelical Old Testament scholarship.
Any of you listeners out there?
Yeah, that's right. Hassel Bullock is the guy. He's been published. He's well known. Because my church background was similar to his church background when he was young, he was just such a great mentor to me. And he spoke life into me. And he was the one. He was a graduate of Hebrew Union College, which is why I ended up at Hebrew Union College.
No kidding.
And for him to be that person, I still, when I look at professional meetings around biblical scholarship, we see him and we catch up. And there's this really, really powerful thing to, because you realize he was investing in me as a college student, as a grad student. Hebrew Union College, they're professors. And again, here are the great Jewish professors, this graduate student, Christian graduate student. But again, they're pouring into me. And they're challenging me to think deeper, to work harder, and to be creative as a scholar and think new things. And you wrestle with, how do I think about these things and hold on to faith? and we're coming from different faith traditions, but they can still speak life in them. And so at that stage, continue to have these people who in different areas speak things into you. And now it's interesting that I don't have a person that I would say this is this one like mentor person, but I have people that I connect with on a regular basis. A number of them are pastors in the area who have kind of formed a, you know, we have our little group that we try to meet and try to get together for lunch or whenever we can. And again, as we walk through life, being challenged by them, being walking through things with them when they struggle has been a powerful thing about Christian community, which I think sometimes as guys, there's this, I can get through anything and I would just push through and I'm not going to tell people it's hard. I'm not going to tell people when I struggle. To have some close brothers that you can do that with, that's a powerful thing.
I agree with that, man. Dean, you bring in wisdom, brother. I appreciate you so much. Listeners, guys in the grown man community, mentors come in a number of different ways. Sometimes you don't even realize someone that ends up impacting you. It may be down the road. It may be a person that you didn't realize their influence and their presence just made such an impact. And so, you know, Dean, thank you for that. I appreciate it. Man, if there's anything I can tell you guys out there, if you have someone like a Dean in your life, that you are better for it. And so, Dean, thanks for being on the podcast today, man. We really appreciate you here at the Grown Man Project. Any final words, any last nuggets to leave the guys with?
Well, I will say getting to be old and doing something for a long time, the beauty of it is seeing people like yourself, because there are times as teachers, I always tell teachers, right, you need to be able to see delayed gratification to be happy as a teacher.
Delayed gratification.
And to see, and here's the really cool thing for me now, seeing what you're doing with your life, seeing what we've now in the upper school, I think we have like 4 alumni teaching, where you remember them as students, remember them as people that you're trying to get your head wrapped around, right? At 14, 15 years old, what world are they going to end up being? And then now you see them as these people that not only are you proud of doing a good job, you can learn from too. And there is nothing more fulfilling than doing something that reproduces in ways that you see grow to places that move beyond what you can even do yourself. And I would just encourage people as they are leading in their family, in their work, in their communities, that the things that are most impactful are not necessarily going to be those fast, quick wins that you see. They're going to be these things that play out over years and decades. But if you do something for 1 or 2 years and you say, you know, that was me for teaching high school, you do something else, you wouldn't see the outcome of how God used the things that I was a hack trying to figure out how to teach high school kids, but God still used that to produce all kinds of fruit. That's not about me. That's about being in a place where God uses our gifts to do his work. And so if one thing I can encourage people with is that idea of stand on the plow, that idea of just continuing on, that idea of when there are times in DC where like, why am I doing this? Like, it feels frustrating, or I should have gone to college, I should have. And then you come through that whole thing, and you keep moving forward, and you see what God makes out of it. And so wherever you're at, for people listening, you might be in this place that says, there's not enough bang to walk, or I'm not seeing what I need to see, and it's not happening fast enough. If you're really where God has called you to be, you have to trust God, that God is working out the end results that he's planned.
Be a good steward. Be a good steward. Dean, I love you, brother. Thank you so much. Appreciate you. Thanks for being on. Hey, guys, this is the Grown Man Project. Until next time, this is Coach A with special guest, Dr. Dean Nicholas. We're out. Wow. Well, I don't know about you guys listening in, but I hope that this message from my good friend, Dr. Nick, Dean Nicholas, man, I hope you took something away from it. The gentleman himself is just, he gets it. He's a good man through and through. He's a grown man. And so I'm so happy that he got on and shared his wisdom and his life with us. And guys, if you're out there and you're like, gosh, I love what's going on here. I love what I'm hearing. I like what this is about. Would love to get you signed up. Come on over to the Grown Man Project. You can find us at www.grownmanproject.com/community. And we would love to just have you sign up. You can get in our weekly email. There's lots of great content in there, connection spots, little tidbits, links to different things. And we would love for an opportunity to just connect with you. So if you're looking for community, you got one here, come on over, join the Grown Man Project. Again, we're all here trying to grow. We're all trying to improve because we are a constant project. Hey, thanks again for tuning in. Until next time, this is the Grown Man Project.